peers, amongst your friends, amongst your comrades, amongst other parents, are a number of things that need to be kept in mind. You mentioned the two things that we've talked about previously, and now we want to mention a few more as well, if time permits.
Inshallah.
An important feature a parent needs to have is being just, as we call adil, right? Now, right. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, وَإِذَا حَكَمْتُمْ بَيْنَ النَّاسِ, if you judge between people, أَن تَحْكُمُوا بِالْعَدْلِ, that you deal with justice.
Right.
Now, dealing with justice is quite important for a parent to be different from the rest. For example, a parent needs to be fair and just when he makes a mistake, that he admits he made a mistake.
Oh, that's a difficult one, Sayyid.
Uh-huh. So with children, when they make a mistake, we want them to admit that they made a mistake.
And immediately.
Immediately.
Right.
Okay, apologize. A parent, a successful parent, if he makes a mistake, he is adil, he is just to say, okay, that is what I expect from my children, I'm going to do the same. I do apologize, my son. Sorry, my daughter. Right. That's wrong of me. I shouldn't have done that.
They set an example.
Yeah, please forgive me.
Right.
I remember for example, my father would always, sometimes when he gets angry and stuff like that, he would, after a while, he come back and he apologizes, like, I am sorry, you know, forgive me, I got angry. So a successful parent is the one that is just, and I just give you one example.
Right. And on that note, they'll say we'll go on a quick break.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Today we're discussing how a parent can excel in their duty as a good parent. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion.
Okay. We were talking about being just. So we said being just as a parent, it actually makes your kids, if you're constantly just, you know, adil in everything, it will make your kids love you, because naturally speaking, as human beings, we are inclined towards those who are just.
Right.
Because we don't fear anything wrong from them.
We do not fear any wrongdoing, oppression.
Yeah, because like he's right. A just person. He will only do that which is good.
Right.
So with parents, if the parent is just and the kids know that, that first will make them love the parents, one. Two, it would make them treat one another with fairness and justice as well, because this is the feature that
right.
runs in the family. So this is something that we require. Now, that adds to the success of the murabbi, of the educator, of the parent, and adds a success to kids themselves, that they learned a new trait, a virtue, as we said. So that's what we say. It's important to be just. It's very important. It's very important for a parent, for example, to be just when arguments happen between children themselves.
Right.
Right. When children argue between themselves and you intervene, you have to be just, because sometimes we burden the older with too much and we spoil the younger because he's the youngest, he's the weakest.
Right.
He's a, no, you should be fair with all of them. Right? You should teach them to learn to be fair and equal amongst each other. So if they see that kind of action from you, that you are being fair with one another, they get into an argument, and so sometimes when my son gets an argument with my daughter, for example, the mother was like, "Oh, you're the boy, give it to her." I was like, no. Him
right.
being a boy, it doesn't mean I overtake his right.
Doesn't mean do not be
yeah.
fair or
you,
equal.
No, you don't
right.
You don't overtake his right. Now you give him the choice. If he wants to give to his sister, that's up to him.
Right.
But you can't just force it out of him because he's the boy and she's
the girl. It is expected of you.
Yeah, so
no.
Don't play that card, right?
Right.
So if the parents are just in this kind of dealing with the children, when it comes, their children will learn that trait and they would love their parents and they will be more successful. When it comes to giving gifts, for example, sometimes you see a parent would buy something for the young ones and he leaves the older one. Now, that creates a lot of tension between kids themselves. That's
jealousy.
Something we don't need.
Right.
So we need the kids to be loving one another. Now, if I have to buy one for my child, I have to buy another for my child as well. You know, like in Islam, if you had the chance to do polygamy, to be married to two women,
right.
Islamically, you are required to be fair to both of them. That if you buy this one a certain type of clothes, you need to buy the exact same thing for the other wife. So you need to be fair. I mean, they're grown adults, but Islam says because they're two, because they are under your protection and care, you need to give them the same. Give them equal the same. Each one gets her night, each one gets her everything, the same way that the other one gets. Same thing with children. We need that justice to happen in order for you to be a successful parent.
And on that note, dear Sayyid, we will go on a quick break.
Imam As-Sajjad alayhi salam said, "A child's right is to be kind to him when educating him, forgiving him, covering his mistakes, acting moderately towards him, and helping him."
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to the program Islamic Upping. Today we are discussing how a parent can be the most excellent parent they may be. Dear Sayyid, please continue the discussion about how important it is for the parent to be just.
Okay, so we said that a parent, to be successful, to be distinguished, to be outstanding amongst other parents, the fact that they need to be just. And we mentioned a few things. And justice is the thing that if a person makes as a habit in the house and dealing between his kids, it's one of these things that will increase the love of children for the parents. And sometimes when, if God forbid, if a relationship breaks up and the parents get this to separate, you would see that the children, they would maintain that relationship with both parents because they have no issue with them. Now, if the kids see that one of the parents is more oppressive, then when a divorce happens or separation happens, you see that the children, they would neglect or at least they would fight or they would stand against the other parent because they know that this guy or this mother is not wanted. I remember a case recently that I got being through where the child, he sent his father a voice message. And because the child, he saw that most of the times during in the house when they were living together, the father would always do things that the mother now or the child perceived to be unjust. Now, from the perspective of the father, he was doing the right thing. But maybe things didn't go very well. So the child, he thinks that the father was unjust. So he sent him a voice message calling him all sorts of names. And he only like, I don't know, 11, 12, right? Calling him names, swearing at his dad, saying to him, "You're an evil man, you this and you that." Now, obviously, the mother had something to do with it.
Of course.
But sometimes I've seen other relationships when they break up, but I've seen that the perfect harmony between the kids and the parents, even though they are separated, because at least that the father at certain stage, he's fair to his kids. He's just to his kids. He doesn't, you know, separate between them when it comes in terms of love, in terms of care, in terms of gifts, in terms of arguments, in terms of everything. He's cool with his children. No, maybe he has a problem with his spouse. But when it comes to his children, he's cool with them. Now, this is the kind of fairness that we want. Because God forbid, if a person is unjust to his kids. Now, mind you, the kids are trust and amanah from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Now, I don't want to stand in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and being questioned for the injustice that I've made amongst my kids or amongst my family, because at the end of the day, every action that I do, every word that I say, it's you know, it would have an effect in a way or another on the family. It would have an effect on the child's upbringing. It would have an effect on the child's mentality. It would leave a trauma. So constantly, if I am mindful and watchful of my actions and I'm trying to be as just as I can, then obviously that should create this sense of peace in the house. And inshallah, I will be safe once I go to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. But if I don't keep that, then not only I will destroy the family here, I also will be questioned in the court of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
And may Allah show mercy on us that day. Dear Sayyid, I thank you for providing us with valuable information. I also thank you, dear listeners, for tuning in. Dear listeners, if you have any questions, comments, or just some feedback, please contact us at our email at englishradio@irrb.ir. You can also visit our website at parstoday.com. Alternatively, you can also find us on the various social media accounts we have, on, for example, Facebook or Instagram, under the call handle of Call of Islam Radio. Thank you for tuning in.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. Islam solves all of our problems. Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth. Imam Khomeini, in his famous work, The Combat with the Self, explains, unless a person fully acquaints himself with the knowledge of the Sharia laws and follows them faithfully, the higher value of morality cannot be attained by him. Without adhering to the apparent teachings of Islam, it is not possible that the light of the divine knowledge could descend upon his heart, and the wisdom of the invisible and the mysterious of the holy law be revealed to him. Sayyid Mohsen Naghvi, he has PhD on Islamic science.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. We are with another golden saying of Imam Khomeini. In one of his sayings, Imam Khomeini has said that today Islam, a progressive school that is capable of meeting all needs of man and solve his problems, has caught the attention of all Muslims of the world, especially the Iranian Muslim nation. Now, this is when Imam Khomeini has obviously delivered the speech. When he delivered, he's especially talking about the Iranian nation, that the search of Islam, a true Islam, the true Muhammadan Islam, should be in everyone. Everyone should go for the true Muhammadan Islam. And that is very important, because we can see there are many groups within Islam. Since we are looking for the true Islam, therefore we should strive for the true Islam. And this is the power of the true Islam, that the Iranian Muslim nation, they went for it, and obviously with their true leader, they were able to have an Islamic revolution.
Ya Rabbana, salli ala Taha al-Nabi wa alihi. Sallallahu alayhi.
This Islamic revolution that we see today after these many years in the country of Iran, it is because the Iranian nation, the Muslim nation, they went for the true Islam. And because they were trying and they had the leaders who led them to the true Islam, they were able to have this revolution. And why having a revolution? Why they're still having this country? It's because the Islam itself, the religion of Islam itself, it's a progressive school which is capable of meeting all the needs of man and solve its problems. We are looking for different systems, whether are they capable of meeting the needs of the mankind or not, or to solve the problems of mankind or not. We can see there were many systems, many religions which came, and later they were unable to answer the needs of the people. Whereas Islam is not such a religion, and Islam is progressing every day, and it's moving onwards every day. Inshallah, may Allah give us tawfiq to follow the Islam in its true way.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
No mosque in Seville.
The water erupts and flows through the Alcázar Garden, part of Seville, Spain, in which the royal household is located. This place is also considered the official area of the central government. More than 10 centuries ago, Muslims ruled over this land. Abdulrahman III, Caliph of Córdoba, ordered the construction of these buildings. That was when the historical triangle of big Islamic capitals of Andalus, Cordoba, Granada came into being. Gradually, Alcázar became the center of cultural life in the city. Alcázar is also a prime example of architecture that shows the elegance of a civilization, which is still an immeasurable part of the Al-Andalus identity. This majestic example of architecture, even after being recaptured by the Christians, retained its elegance and was developed by Muslim architects once again. Outside these walls, Giralda can be seen. The mosque's minaret is adjacent to the Alcázar Castle. This minaret, which is currently being used as the Catholic Church steeple, became the international symbol of Seville City. This is one of the famous historical landmarks in the capital city, Al-Andalus.
Historically, people, academia, and politicians have always noticed the importance of the Islamic Seville in its own era. Seville played an important role, both in the time of war and peace. Even today, the name of Seville can be found in political books. There are also other proven facts, such as immigrants that can be seen in the streets or working in institutions in the city of Seville.
Every day, thousands of tourists, mostly Muslims from every corner of the globe, visit their historical heritage. They can't help thinking about the past, the time when things were better for Muslims. This statement holds true for this neighborhood and the ones on the outskirts of Seville, where many Muslim immigrants, mostly Moroccan, reside. This neighborhood has been devastated by economic strife, unemployment, and a lack of social resources. The basement of this building, which isn't easily noticed, is one of the 6 mosques in the town. Perhaps it is better to describe it as something more like a hall for the Muslim community to perform their religious rituals in. This place is located among the malls and business centers that used to thrive in the past.
Assalamu alaikum, yo soy Jihad.
Hi, I'm Jihad Sarasua from Seville, Al-Andalus. I'm a Muslim. We are in Ishbilia Mosque that we built in the Emeit neighborhood, so Muslims could perform their rituals. This is one of the popular neighborhoods of Seville, where many of us are living together. This mosque was built to meet today's needs of the Muslim community. This is all we have in this neighborhood. This neighborhood belongs to the working class, so this place is okay considering the fact that there is no business or social centers here. We have to, as Muslims, build up a community in such a poor condition. But we need a place where Muslims of Seville can get together to display the true image of Muslim communities, right? Yes, of course, we need that. We are working hard to get what we want. We need a proper neighborhood to show the splendid image of Islam in Seville.
Probably asking the municipality on behalf of the Muslim community of the city would make them grant us a loan. We could use it for Bujeira Mosque, located in Mila de Oro, Seville. We also have historical background in our favor. The constructions will be close to the Alcázar Castle, one of the greatest preserved treasures from the caliphates. There we meet Javier Fito, one of the residents of Seville who is defending his Muslim community's right to a place where they can perform their rituals and congregations.
As far as I know, most of the mosques are in the basements of buildings. Sometimes these places get really crowded and there is also a lack of space and standard conditions. In the best case scenario, we can only have access to emergency exits. We don't even have the basic conditions here. Trying to have the right place is what we can do to make this situation better. Mosques are supposed to be social centers and community spaces, just like Catholic churches or any other social centers. We should have a better place for public use. What we have right now is still far away from what we have in mind. These places are really cramped. These buildings are not designed for religious purposes. Therefore, problems like poor standards of hygiene arise.
This is what the Muslim community has been struggling against for 25 years. These struggles started when some people in Seville who had converted to Islam openly asked for a proper mosque. While other religious communities had a better situation, they continued to struggle because they had to gather in unsuitable places to pray together.
There are some lecture halls for praying in the basements, lower floors or on the outskirts of Seville. There is no congregational mosque in Dol in spite of efforts to have one.
The idea of building this mosque became a contentious issue in the 90s. At that time, I was a member of the city council and I held the position until 2003. It all started when the Muslim community went to the municipality to get them convinced to have a congregational mosque. Well, personally, I believe that almost everyone in the municipality and political parties there liked the idea, because the idea had a sense of mutual respect and religious freedom. It's quite natural, isn't it? So, different religions can have their own place to perform their rituals. There could also be some other aspects in addition to having a mosque. At the beginning, it seemed that there was no problem with it. There were talks about renting a place for that purpose in Seville, somewhere that had traces of Islamic traditions. Everything passed so quickly and there was no result. They noticed it would be problematic to convert an old church into a mosque in the center of the city. They wanted more than that. It was more affordable to have it built in a new neighborhood. That was when they looked at Bermejal as an option, right?
This is the mosque in Seville. The only accepted and known mosque in the city that we can talk about as a mosque without any inhibitions is this one. Especially when the famous footballer Frederick Knut bought this place and gave it to Al-Ikhwan al-Muslimun, who, after some failed attempts to build a mosque, took the initiative and managed this place.
Tomado ese relevo.
We gathered at Al-Andalus Parliament to talk it out with MPs and PSOE. Then we asked for the place, just like what other religious communities had, a place with good conditions and enough space for public use. Then we officially registered our request, and after 2 months we got our answer. We had an agreement to allot a place to the Muslim community. It was out of the city with no other buildings around, and we had no other way but to accept it. After a while, we noticed it wouldn't be that bad in the distant future. We accepted it, and we did the paperwork, and we even got the deeds and documents.
Now they have started working on the construction of this mosque on the land which belonged to the Muslim community. The responsibility was given to this young architect from Seville, and they started the project with a predetermined fund of more than 3 million euros. This mosque was supposed to be one of the biggest mosques in Europe, a building of 3,000 square meters, two floors, a capacity of more than 2,000 people, a public yard and a private parking lot. A mosque which would finally give the Muslims of this city a place to congregate. And of course, the rest of the people of Seville would be able to enjoy the modern atmosphere of the place, in which followers of different religions and schools of thought could gather to swap ideas and information.
El volumen principal, como no puede ser otra forma, es la nave que hace de oratorio.
The original structure was a ship of two floors with a dome covered by green tiles. Undoubtedly, genders are separated in accordance with the Islamic law. So the first floor would be used by men and the second floor by women. In the center, we have two hollow places leading to the dome. And in the front, we have the qibla with a somewhat upward slope to show a symbolic feature which can only be seen in a mosque. Around the main yard, we would have different services. Some of them were considered for public use and some of them more private, such as a halal restaurant, a cafeteria, a library, and a place for other cultural activities, originally designed to be used as a cultural environment for public use.
Now that we had the land, the project was presented, accepted, and funded to start. Everything was ready to end 10 years of marginalization. It was almost impossible for the growing number of Muslims in Seville to dream of a mosque, but then everything went wrong.
Soon, a rumor went around that a mosque was going to be built, something that wasn't easy to hide. It didn't seem bad or something that neighbors wouldn't like. The idea of building a mosque wasn't against the society or any other religious sects. Well, it's hard to find an old church in the city center district. It's obvious that we can't find a space in the city center. That's why the idea of building new neighborhoods came up. Normally, in an old neighborhood, the government had already monopolized the lands and any other construction activities. Everything was running smoothly until the neighbors found out about the mosque and they reacted badly against it.
Las personas del barrio en que se iba a plantear la
The neighborhood was biased against building a mosque.
De alguna manera
biased, yes. Most of these immigrants from the West are economically down. And in most cases they cannot even meet their basic needs. It's not right to think of keeping the poor and the immigrants away from yourself. We shouldn't forget, not too long ago, we had the same situation when we had to emigrate to France or Germany. I think all we needed was a smile and more support instead of xenophobia.
This is Conchita Rivas. She has been the chief of the Bermejales neighborhood since it was established. She is one of the public figures against the construction of the mosque. They claim they have no intention of insulting the Muslim community. They simply prefer a medical clinic to a mosque. Today, they are passing by an abandoned land with no mosque or any other construction in the public interest.
At the beginning, it was mentioned in the press that Muslims want to build the biggest mosque in Europe. We went to the municipality for some explanations, and they said that it had already been planned and there was nothing we could do about it. I told them that Bermejales community had also a part in making decisions. We'd had other important plans on the agenda and they hadn't been actualized yet. This is why we disagreed. However, we held a referendum in Paseo de Europa Park to decide the issue. In addition, on our left side, we had a related opinion box for saying yes or no to the mosque. There wasn't even one ballot paper in the ballot box.
A partir de ese momento en el que se hace esa asamblea informativa,
then we received information indicating that anything bad could happen. We tried the idea two times and they opposed us each time. We tried to sort things out.
Nosotros intentamos mediar en todos los aspectos, volvemos a hablar con ella.
We talked to them and we talked to the press to tell them they had no right to treat us like animals. Behind all this, there were also children at the school to whom the idea of xenophobia was indoctrinated by the neighbors. This issue was spreading nationwide. On the internet, we could see anti-mosque posts on websites from across Spain, Valencia, Madrid. We received emails and messages that had no indication of the term coexistence.
These documents and newspaper pieces are about the Mosque Project lawsuit, the project begun by the Muslim community. It was interesting to see the unusual presence of the National Intelligence Center at different stages of the whole issue, and both sides of the struggle mention this.
Yo fui visitada por dos agentes del Centro Nacional de Inteligencia.
I met with two officials in the National Intelligence Center. These people were trying to convince me that I had to forget about the whole thing. But I had my goals. I have always fought against injustice, ignorance, and whatever I'd find insulting. I told them that I wasn't going to give up.
Nuestras relaciones con las con los organismos de información del Estado son directas.
We were in direct contact with the CNI itself and the CNI police.
Desde el CNI hasta a la policía.
In every aspect, we were frank and direct. We had nothing to hide from the society.
Es decir, nosotros no hemos ocultado ni tenemos nada que ocultar a la sociedad.
After a long lawsuit, the Supreme Court voted in favor of the neighbors, and the municipality was criticized for poor decision-making. Now, the municipality was trying to find a new place for the mosque. The new place was on Cartuja Island, where international exhibitions used to be held in 1992, a combination of abandoned, transferred, and constructed lands for educational and business purposes. The entrepreneurial community of Seville was the last to oppose the construction of the mosque. We chose three places: a church, a piece of land for public use in a newly built neighborhood, and a piece of land in an area for public services. Three projects, three hopes, three failures. But the Muslims did not give up. They chose another piece of land to buy in a neighborhood of San Jeromino. Once again, the neighbors took to the streets and the same scenes took place. Even some extremists buried a pig in the land chosen for the construction to make fun of Islamic law, which asserts pigs are unclean. The truth is that they wanted to stop them from building the mosque, no matter what. Finally, the whole project came to a halt.
I believe that this issue, apart from being politically motivated, was a problem of coexistence. And also another crucial factor can be the lack of understanding a civilization or a certain way of thinking. I think all these contributing factors sapped the mosque project. Personally, I truly believe that Muslims in Seville deserve a proper mosque.
It's hard to believe that a city like Seville, which was ruled by Muslims for more than five or six centuries with its Islamic background, has no place for Muslims to perform their rituals. Most of the neighborhoods oppose the idea of constructing a mosque, although more important issues can be found in these neighborhoods. We are in San Jeronimo, La Macarena. Since the time of economic crisis, this part of the city has been hit by depression. These people are losing everything. Yet, they demonstrate not against these crises, not against unemployment or their violated rights, but against their neighbors who want to build a place to do their rituals, simply because they don't understand the metaphysical values behind it. These people have no reason to stop the Muslims to build a mosque.
Whoever wants to be the Seville mayor has to know that the city needs a place to represent the Muslim community. Honestly, according to our constitution, our city deserves such a place. We will try to find another way, with the help of the private sector, to get this project done. And we hope to make it happen in the years to come. An unofficial census estimates the population of the Muslim community to be around 10,000, representing at least 20 different nations. Most of them were converted Spaniards, Moroccans, and others from southern parts of Africa.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is your host, Musa al-Bahadili, and you are now listening to the program Q&A on Islamic beliefs. Joining us in the studio is a dear friend and guest speaker, Sayyid Muhsin Naqawi, from the Islamic Seminary of Qum. Dear Sayyid, I welcome you and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
Thank you for joining us, dear Sayyid. Sayyid, in our day and age, we constantly see multiple and very, subhanAllah, weird, I might say, and new plagues, diseases, and illnesses going around. Like, for example, in these past 5-6 years, we had Ebola in Africa, if you remember how many people died. And then we had the Zika virus in Brazil, and many more people died. And then now we have Corona, and many people are dying. So all of these diseases and waba, as you call them in Arabic, plagues, are these a sign of the end times? Are these a sign of the reappearance of the awaited Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, ajallahu ta'ala farajuhu sharif? Or are they just a fact of life?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Yes, that's true. We can see many viruses or diseases spreading in the world. For example, there was a disease, SARS.
SARS as well, right.
You know, we were not getting any letters because they used to say that some people, like from special country,
right,
they're sending SARS through the envelopes and these and that.
Right.
We had these issues as well, and there are many other things.
Right.
Now, when we talk about these things, we cannot just say these are the signs of the Akhirah or, you know, the end of the world. Rather, these are, I'm trying to find a good word for it because it has a very bad wording if I want to use the actual wording for this.
But obviously,
it's something which is created by humans, you know, the mess which is made by humans.
Right.
Well, if I want to use
this,
the actual
that we have done on Earth,
yes,
and in the
American or in the British, you know, the way they use like this mess of mankind, they use other words, but obviously we don't want to use
ourselves, climate change, fossil fuel,
so
all of these things.
This facade, this corruption that we see, it's because of the human beings. They are very much interrupting into the nature, and they are basically destroying the nature. The way ozone layer is getting, you know,
it was damaged,
obviously,
because of the carbon emissions.
Damaging because of the human beings. You know, now
global
we
warming.
Have less trees. We have global warming is obviously increasing. The amount of garbage that we have, the amount of noise, the sound noise that we create, the pollution, obviously.
Right.
The pollution is not just about the carbon. It's about the noise pollution as well. And, you know, the stress that we release from ourselves. All these things are the factors that are making or changing this world into such a situation. And the amount of, you know, the laboratories, the way they are examining different things, and every day they come up with a new virus, and then although they don't have it, either they have the antivirus or they do not have. Allah knows it.
Right.
But obviously, we need to see our own actions as a human being. That what is our responsibility, because Islam itself talks about the justice, and it talks about the justice in all fields. If I'm living in an environment, how justly can I live so that I'm not damaging the environment surrounding me? It includes the trees, it includes the plants. I don't know if our listeners knows that, you know, cutting a tree in Islam has the orders of killing a man. because tree is alive. According to some traditions, it is said when you cut a tree, it means that you have killed a man, a human being.
A human being. All right.
So it is just equivalent to killing a human being. And now we can see, like, in the jungles, there are many people who are cutting. And today...
You're losing the Amazon jungle.
Yes. And today we have come to this thing that we should work without papers, by texts or emails and all those, like paper-free,
right.
Basically.
Or at least
movement
sustainable
that we have. Yes.
Paper. Right.
This is a good movement. But obviously we can also see that, you know, last year, because of coronavirus, when we had less activities outside, there were less cars, public was communicating or traveling.
Right.
Or harming the nature, we could see that the nature was revived.
Right.
Realived. There were many rivers which had more water than before. The plants we had grown more than before. So right. It had an effect on the nature. And this is some of the signs which basically these are the alarming signs that tells us, that warns us that, look, you messed up the whole world. Now for a year when you had a break, you can see how nature came back,
right.
How the nature had recovered, yes,
right.
Itself. So we need to be very much careful. Now, the issue is, you know, in the Islamic world and obviously non-Islamic world, because everyone is worried about the death and the, you know, last age,
right.
That they say it's the end of the world.
Right.
We can see
times.
Many movies like, for example, like it was 2012.
2012, very
end of
movie.
The world, and
right.
Then we have Dune now coming up.
Right. Remember the Mayan calendar that ended in 2012? Everybody thought the world is going to end.
Yes. So we had many movies made on this.
Right.
Why? Because we are worried about hereafter. We are
right.
Worried about the end of this world. And this being worried is more from the secular system, from those who have material mentality, who
right.
Are following the material view, worldview.
Because in their view, their
yes.
Existence is tied
according
to
their
world.
View, yes, the death is the end of everything.
Right.
And there is nothing after it. It's the existence and non-existence. So with the death, they think they do not exist anymore.
Right.
Whereas in the Islamic school of thought, in the other religions, there is another world after this world. And we are transferring, with the death, we transfer from this material world to something which is metaphysic, to something which is beyond this world. And that is the continuation of our journey, basically. So therefore,
right.
We are not very much worried about this. Rather, we are worried that when we die, we should die with having good deeds.
Right.
In our book of deeds.
Because right. We know we're going somewhere.
Yes, not the bad deeds. So
right.
We should die in a way that we were useful for this world, for the environment, for our
society.
Family, for the
right.
Society, and we were amongst those who will be known as good people, not the evil.
Right.
So this is what we think.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Now, on the other hand, obviously, we have many narrations there. The things have been said in the books as well. There were the people who used to talk about or tell about the future. They have said that, obviously, that when the end of the world will come, obviously, the people will die. And there are many other signs. So all these things are in the narrations. And we have it. Either the people will die due to, you know, the messed up...
Sorry, say it to interrupt. Are these correct narrations?
No, I'm just talking about general narrations.
So we have, okay.
Yeah,
right.
We have. Obviously, but all these things are happening, these wordings that spread amongst
right.
The people that these diseases are, for the last time, obviously, the earth will go... The world will go to the end. There are many different movies. I don't know, for the recent movies, there are many which are talking about the disease. Some movies are made on the coronavirus, and then people are isolated into their homes or lands. There are some, obviously, who are struggling for a living. So all these things we can see in the media, obviously.
Especially war is going to end the world, nuclear war and so on.
It's not the nuclear war anymore. Like, no one's going to use it, because we ourselves have made so many, you know, diseases and these things, so which will...
That's what people fear most now.
So all these things are there. I'm just telling about such some of the other narrations so that, you know, we should be aware that why these things are made, why such things are said. It is based on some of the narrations like this. There is a narration. Now, but on the other side, when we talk about the end of the world, obviously we know that in the Islamic, studies, or according to the Islamic teachings, we know that the end of the world will happen after the reappearance of Imam Mahdi alayhi salam, for whom we are waiting.
That's certain.
And obviously the whole world will be changed into a peaceful world, the way it is corrupted now. It is said, like in the narrations, there is a verse as well in the Quran that before the Imam Mahdi comes, the whole world will sink in the corruption.
Be filled with corruption.
It will be filled with the corruption, and then when he comes, he will change the world, and he will bring justice to the world, and everyone will reach or go towards the perfection. Basically, the journey of perfection will start, and they will quickly reach to the perfection. Obviously, we are still at the journey of perfection. So these are the narrations that we have for the end of the world. And after he dies or get martyred, after that, there will be the end of the world. Also, we have narration that if on this world, if there are only two people left or remained alive in this world, they should know that one of them is Imam Mahdi and another is an ordinary man. So until up till here, we have these narrations. But as far as it is referred to these viruses, to these illnesses, diseases that are spreading, it is because of the mess that we have made to this world. And we are far away from the healthy foods, the original, you know, thing that we used to eat. And we have these industrial, you know, made chemical, made things, and due to which, obviously, our immune system is, obviously, it's getting weaker and weaker every day.
And on that sobering thought, we will unfortunately have to end today's program. I thank the dear Sayyid for his time today and for his insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in.
إِنَّ فِي الْجَنَّةِ نَهْرًا لَبَنْ إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Her name, as I said, is Fatima. She's the daughter of Musa, the seventh Imam, who is obviously the son of our sixth Imam, Ja'far. And so we know her as Fatima bint Musa ibn Ja'far. And her title, as we all know, as is very well known, is Al-Ma'suma. Although, again, not infallible, because that infallibility, that isma, is reserved for those 14 personalities, the Prophet, his daughter Fatima Zahra, peace be upon her, and the 12 Imams, alayhimu salam. But just like Abul Fadl Abbas, alayhi salam, although we don't call him ma'sum, but we don't have examples of sins that he would have performed. And is as well for Sayyida Zainab, alayha salam, we don't have any example of sins that she would have performed in her life. And so, and as we know, that there are various levels and gradations of infallibility of isma, not a part of my topic for tonight, but just to let us know that there are levels, gradations. And really, if you think about it, what is infallibility or protection from not committing sins? It's something that, you know, in a way, people can also develop to an extent, because when you realize the gravity of sins, when we realize the punishment of sins for some, that would hopefully keep us away from them. Just as we know the dangers and harms of consuming things like a person would never drink, for example, paint thinner or bleach, because they know of the outcome, the impact to the body. And if we were to recognize the impact to the body and the soul of the sins that are possible to be committed, and we recognize the gravity of them, and we recognize the gravity of who we are sinning against, then obviously we would be able to develop a level of infallibility within our lives. In any case, that's not a part of my topic for tonight, so let me move on. She was, move on in the topic of Fatima Masuma alayha salam, the topic I want to speak to you all tonight about. She was born, according to some narrations, on the 1st of Dhul Qa'dah in the year 173 after the Hijrah. That is around March 22nd, 790 of the Common Era, and she was born in the beautiful city of Medina, the city of, obviously, Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. She lived a very short life. Historians narrate, according to the dominant opinion, or at least one of the opinions, that she left this world on the 10th of Rabi'a Thani in the year 201, coinciding to about November the 5th in the year 816, and she passed away and is buried in Qum. Some narrations obviously say that, you know, she may have fallen, or she did fall ill outside of the city of Qum and eventually made it to Qum before passing away. And so if you look at the numbers, her life was only about 26 years. Very short, obviously. When, you know, although even at that time, people, you know, didn't live hundreds of years or 80, 90, 100 years, obviously. But still 26 years, a very young age. Now, one of the questions may come up is that how did she get all the way from Medina in the Hijaz all the way to the city of Qum in present-day Iran? And, you know, that's a journey of a couple of thousand kilometers. And obviously for the best of travelers, it would have been a very arduous, long trek. For a young woman in her 20s to make that journey is obviously even more of a challenge, I would say. But that entire story, which is a very lengthy event of how she leaves Medina to get to obviously trying to make her way to Mashhad to go and be reunited with her brother, Imam Ar-Radha alayhi salam, the eighth Imam, and obviously ending up just outside of Qum, falling ill, and then moving over to Qum to pass away there. That's a very lengthy story. I don't want to speak about that this evening. There are ample lectures available and books that are on the topic of her life and why she made that trek and how that journey went through, and you can refer to those for more information. I do want to look at the topic tonight of daughters in Islam, however. women maybe in general, but more so the daughters. But there's an interesting story I want to share with you from the time of Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam, and we'll conclude for tonight. And that's from the time of the Imam and a companion named Sakuni. He comes and he says in this hadith, in this story, that he says, I went to see Abu Abdullah, meaning Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam. And he says, I was gloomy, I was distressed, I had this visible sign of grief on my face. I go to the Imam, he says, and the Imam looks at me and says, Oh Sakuni, why are you so upset? Why are you so sad? Why?